Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the top 100 trades as sold through Diamond to retailers for February 2008. Joining me, as always, on these episodes is Chris Marshall of the Collected Comics Library podcast. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good. Good morning, John. First time we're doing this in the morning.
Yeah, well,
we always record at night, late at night. I have my Starbucks with me this morning.
You're one up on me. I got no caffeine in me, so... So if I start sleeping, that's why. Well, let's take a look at the breakdown of the trades. We're back to kind of standard status quo with DC and Marvel both taking, at this point, actually a little under 30%. So we're back towards that kind of even three-way split, or roughly even, with DC, Marvel each taking a third, and everyone else taking the other third. Now, it's interesting that both are below 30% by units. DC came in first place on this list with 29.87% of the total unit sales for the top 100 trades, and Marvel came in just a little behind with 28.6% of the total units for the top 100. Now, Dark Horse came in, I think, a very strong third place with 16.37%. of those unit sales for the top 100 as well. And then from there it drops off with Image at about 6.13%, Viz at about 4.31%, Tokyo Pop at 3.52%, and then from there it goes well under. Well, actually, no, I guess Dynamite had 3.25%, Gemstone had 3.05%, and then from there it goes under the 3% mark. But really, at that point, there's not many publishers left. IDW had just over 2%, Del Rey had about 1.75%, Oni Press had about 0.2%, and Telltale Inc. had 0.6%, and that's the entire breakdown. I mean, there's just not that many publishers this time around. So nothing too surprising there, other than it was just kind of a soft month, and it was a little surprising how the total for both DC and Marvel combined was under 60%. So
it's curious to see the number of reorder items, not only for DC at 6, which is kind of normal, but Marvel is rather low with 2, but Image has 5, and I think that's rather high for Image.
Well, yes and no, because Image tends to do fairly strong on certain trades in reorders. For example, Walking Dead. Now, this time it only had 2 items on the list for Walking Dead, and that was Volume 1 and Volume 7, so the earliest and the most recent trades. Mm-hmm. But what also showed up this month with 2 items on the list were the first 2 trades for Witchblade, and one of them placed in the top 10, and that was the first trade for Witchblade at rank 7 with, let's see, 4,533 units of reorder activity. And, of course, this was the one they priced promotionally at $4.99.
Mm.
So I think that accounts for not only those sales, certainly, but probably for the placement of the second trade. Because even though that was way down at rank 70 and only had 1,418 units of reorder activity, there had to be a couple of retailers that were thinking, hey, at $5 for a trade, there are going to be a couple of people who like this, and some of those are going to want that next trade. So you take those 2 Witchblades, those 2 Walking Deads, you add in Wanted, which is back on the list. That's 5 of the items right there. As a matter of fact, that's all 5 of the reorder items. Mm-hmm. So I think there are a couple of properties for Image that do fairly solid in reorders. Usually it's mainly the Walking Dead stuff, but I'm not too surprised when I see a lot of reorders on the trades for Image.
Okay.
But I agree that for Marvel, only 2 reorder items, that is kind of low.
Mm-hmm.
And really, nobody other than DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, and Image had any reorder items that made the list. So, well, shall we take a look at the list, go from there?
Let's do that, yeah.
This is another month where it just seemed to start low because the top-ranked item was only 7,014 units. That was the second volume of The Boys from Dynamite Entertainment. And that's decent orders for The Boys, but for the top-ranked item, once again, to be right around 7,000 or so. And I think last month was it 7 or 6, but it was not...
It was fairly similar, yeah.
Yeah, it was not all that strong. We've had other months where, I mean, most months, where we'll have something at the 12 to 15 or sometimes even above 20,000 mark. And The Boys doesn't surprise me that it topped the list, but it does surprise me that it topped it at this level. I would have expected at least maybe 8,000, maybe 9. This just seems certainly not like bad numbers. I think these are good numbers for The Boys, but a little lower than I would have expected. The next item on the list is Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 19, Death of the Goblin, from Marvel, with 6,653 units, and that's down about 16.66% from the total known sales of the previous volume, which currently stand at 7,983 units. But, I mean, you get this far into a series of trades, and you really, I don't think, should expect the new volumes to start as strong as the previous volume ended.
Mm-hmm.
So, no big surprise there. And really, it's not that far behind on the sales from The Boys. So, I mean, Ultimate Spider-Man came close to topping the trades list. I think that's impressive.
Yeah, I don't buy a whole lot of Marvel, but it seems like you don't hear of Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, all the hype when there's so much hype around, like, Secret Invasion or, you know, Civil War. And then the Ultimate Universe is still there going strong over in the corner, it seems.
Yeah, I agree that they're not doing a whole lot to really promote it. I think that's starting to change with Ultimate Origin a little. But I'm wondering if... I mean, well, part of it right now, particularly with Ultimate Spider-Man, is they've been doing such a promotional push on the mainstream Spider-Man that
right.
to do too much advertising for the Ultimate Spider-Man would kind of dilute that. But if they had given this a little bit of a promotional push, it easily could have done another couple hundred units, which would have been all it took to take the top slot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Ultimate line has been a huge success for Marvel. And it's just a question of can they keep it that way, can they leverage that, and kind of what are their plans going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, Ultimate Origin will tell that tale, won't it, if they're going to go forward or not, because there's rumors that they're going to do a major shakeup, right, in the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, and, I mean, I could see a couple of different directions they could go in, and kind of incorporating it into the mainstream universe is potentially one of those. I doubt
yep.
they'll go that way, but, you know, who knows? It should be fun to read, so I'm looking forward to it. Let's see, down at rank number 3, we've got the trade paperback for Infinite Crisis, and it did 6,135 units, and they already had the hardcover, so sure, you know, that's part of it, but for an event title collected for the first time in trade, particularly gearing up for Final Crisis right now and things like that, these seem like really soft numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not terribly surprised by this because it's not like there's a lot of mindshare left for Infinite Crisis at the moment between, you know, the 52 stuff having already come out in trades, the Countdown fiasco continuing, and, you know, people trying probably to save up their money for Final Crisis. Because, you know, I don't think there's going to be that many tie-ins and stuff, but you know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
So this was one that I would have expected to do, again, a little bit better. Now, the one that really kind of surprised me was right below that slot 4, and that's the Green Lantern Volume 1 of the Sinestro Corps War hardcover, which only did 6,087 units. And I was kind of thinking that it undersold on the comic book side for this storyline, and that we would have seen a lot more activity here, even initially, on the hardcover. This is one that if it had topped the list at 12,000, I wouldn't have been the least bit surprised. You know, I didn't necessarily expect it to start that high necessarily, but just over 6,000? This is surprising to me. But, you know, I look at the Infinite Crisis trade right above it, and stuff that makes me continue to believe that, one, there's simply more Marvel fans out there than DC fans, and that Marvel events simply do better than DC events. And not because they're any better, any worse on either side, whatever, but Marvel, I think, has a stronger brand recognition, potentially, in some degrees, a more loyal following, and certainly right now, a much better track record on event storylines. I mean, I liked Infinite Crisis, I loved Sinestro Corps War, but you compare those to the response that Civil War got, that World War Hulk got, that Secret Invasion's probably going to get, and it's a night and day difference.
Mm-hmm.
So... this one...
go ahead.
I was going to say, this just surprised me, and hopefully we'll see reorder activity on it.
You know, when I got this in the mail, I was really surprised to see how thin this book was at 5 issues for $25. I mean, I almost wish they would have waited and collected Volume 1, Volume 2, and then the specials all in one big volume instead of spreading it out in these 3-volume series. I'm comparing it to like Planet Hulk, where it had everything self-contained, or even Annihilation, where there were, granted, that was a much bigger story with more books, but it seemed like that would be a better format.
Well, yeah, they had done something kind of like the Planet Hulk, where it's bam, here's all 12 issues in one.
Yeah.
You know, I think that probably would have done better, even at a higher price point.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd have a lot of people saying, yeah, I heard about it. Gee, I can get it all at once.
Well, and Volume 2 is not coming out till June.
That's, well, and hopefully at that point we'll see some reorder activity for this first volume. But yeah. I agree, that's too far apart.
Well, yeah, in June we're going to have the Volume 2 and then the specials.
Yeah.
Book is going to be out too. So those are going to come out like a week apart from each other or whatever. But, you know, I don't know. It's just the price point, I guess, for this book is a little too high for me.
Well, and particularly if it seemed like a thin hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that's just a perception issue. But
right.
I'd have a hard time dropping $25 on something that I felt didn't have some weight to it.
Yeah.
So... I really think that you're right. They should have packaged this in one single volume, even at a $49.99 price point or perhaps even a little bit more than that. But if they had given it a nice packaging, hey, read the entire story all at once, I think people would have been very happy, very excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they didn't, so live and learn.
They didn't.
They should have asked us.
That's right.
Let's see, next on the list from Dark Horse in slot 5 is Savage Sword of Conan, Volume 2, the trade paperback, and this did 4,805 units, so we've dropped from over 6,000 to under 5,000 between slots 4 and 5, and the first volume of Savage Sword of Conan did total known sales of 6,212, so this is a 22 2/3% drop from the total sales to the opening numbers for this, which, frankly, I'm not too worried about because this is something that I think over time, this entire line is probably going to do pretty well for Dark Horse.
Well, this is definitely geared towards the niche Conan audience. I mean, you know, no doubt about it. And if do you know if this series has ever been collected before or reprinted before?
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's possible Bob might know that, because I'm pretty sure he follows this a lot more closely than I do.
I thought this was a very strong showing for this book.
Yeah, I think so, too. This is one where I expect the first volume, you know, if we look at this 10 years from now, at the aggregate sales or whatever, if we knew the total ones or whatever, that the first volume would just do better because it's a first volume and people would try it out. But that the other volumes would certainly have a slow decline or whatever, as is normal, but would center pretty well. In other words, the third volume, if it opens around the 4,800 mark, give or take a few hundred, that's kind of what I expect at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you're entirely right that this is selling to the niche market of Conan fans who already know about the material, perhaps even have it in other formats or whatever, but just want a nice trade collection of it. And this isn't really necessarily going to be, you know, breaking new ground, establishing a new Conan audience, although who knows, hopefully it will.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's its core audience. So this should be a solid, reliable seller for Dark Horse going forward. mm-hmm. and one that wouldn't surprise me to see popping up on the list in reorder activity, particularly for that first volume going forward.
Mm-hmm.
In slot 6, we've got the Justice League of America Volume 2 Lightning Saga hardcover at 4,540 units, which is down about 18.73% from the total known sales of the first volume, which was 5,568 units. And that surprises me a little, in so much as I thought the Lightning Saga was just a really good storyline. And it was a JLA-JSA crossover, so potentially it should have seen a bump from, you know, JSA readers as well. But again, first volume versus a second volume, I think accounts for some of that. So did you read the storyline?
I did not. I'm going to get it in hardcover.
Cool. Definitely.
Because
worth reading.
I think, you know, if I can double check here real quick. I wanted to see how many pages are in this book.
I'm going to guess 128.
Because, I mean, just comparing it to the size of the Sinestro Corps one, because it's the exact same price.
I would think about the same page count, because both of them were five issues or whatever.
I don't see a page count for this. Darn. Oh, well, we can move on. If I find it, I'll interrupt you.
Okay. In Volume 7, we already talked a little about this, and that's the first volume of Witchblade at the $4.99 price point, which I think is just a really smart move to do that kind of promotional push for this. And this came in just below the Justice League Lightning Saga hardcover with 4,533 units versus the 4,540 for Justice League. And this is one of those where the only reason I'm positive this sold just a hair less than Justice League is because the Diamond Order Index was, you know, a hundredth of a point lower. Otherwise, this is, you know, at the point of the math kind of thing and the granularity of the data. It's possible that the sales on these two things were off by as little as potentially a single copy. And just the way the numbers rounded, the way Diamond calculated their order index, the way the numbers get reversed engineered to the total sales, etc., make it seem like potentially more. But anywhere between, say, one and a dozen units is the difference between the first, you know, release, the opening numbers for that Lightning Saga hardcover for Justice League, and this reorder activity at the promotional price of $4.99 for Witchblade. And to me, that really shows how a good marketing push, a dirt cheap price point, just the strength of that. So I found that very interesting.
That's about as dirt cheap as you can get. I mean, $5 for a full-size trade.
Hell, I'm buying some comics at $5, you know?
Exactly. That's my point.
So
here's a real quick, here's the breakdown of the page count. Sinestro Corps War at $25 is 160 pages. The Lightning Saga hardcover for $25 is at 224 pages.
Hmm.
So there's your difference.
Yeah, and a 224 hard...
And it shows, man.
Yeah.
It shows in your hands. It does.
You're going to pick up that Lightning Saga at that page count and think, okay, this is a solid trade. Then you're going to look at that Sinestro Corps one, and it's, you know, you're going to lift it off the shelf thinking it's got some weight to it, and it'll practically throw it through the roof, you know?
Right, and it ends on a cliffhanger. It's like, isn't there more to this story? So
that's
kind of my gripe. But
well, and I agree with it.
I was a sucker. I bought it, you know, but I certainly didn't buy it at $25, but, you know.
But it's one of those things that whenever you take a story like that and split it to multiple volumes, all you're really doing is giving people an easy out to not get that second volume.
Right.
Whereas if you packaged it all in one collection, either they buy it or they don't, you know, and you don't have this issue of the drop-off between the two parts. So.
Well, not only that, but when they're not packaging the Tales of Sinestro Corps War as a Volume 3, which I think is kind of silly by their standards. I mean, you know, there's Volume 1, Volume 2, and there's Green Lantern Tales of the Sinestro Corps hardcover.
I can kind of understand that because I felt that those
were side stories.
From
a marketing standpoint, I think it'd be great for them to do it, and that one is going to be priced at $30.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, really, the way to do this is it's one of the few that I think may have justified going almost straight to, I don't want to say straight to an absolute, but you know what I mean? You do a slipcase edition where you've got a big volume for the Sinestro Corps War and a second smaller one for the Tales of.
Now, wouldn't that be nice for DC to have these three volumes, right, and to sell a slipcase?
Yeah.
Where you could put all, that would be really cool. That would almost make it worthwhile.
Never going to happen, but yeah, it'd be cool.
Never going to happen. It's a good idea.
Again, they should have asked us.
Well, that's what they did with Peanuts. You know, over Fantagraphics, they added in a slipcase after people asked for it. They said, yeah, that would make a great idea. Now you can buy the slipcase separately for a two-volume set. That's really good. It's all it is cardboard and paint. You know, it doesn't cost that much to manufacture a slipcase.
Well, and it was smart for them to do for Peanuts because that's something that's going for how many volumes? I mean, geez.
Like 25 volumes. Yeah.
I mean, that's...
And they're doing it for Dennis the Menace, too.
Yeah. Now, that's smart to do, particularly for those kind of comic strip collections that are going for the huge number of volumes.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Okay, enough of Sinestro. I'm tired of him already.
All right, then we'll move on. See, down at slot 8, we've got the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter First Death hardcover from Marvel Comics. It did 4,362 units, which seems okay. Did this already come out in a trade?
I believe it did.
All right,
yeah.
That's what I was thinking too, because these seemed really soft for like opening numbers of the first collection. So that's why I was thinking it had to be a subsequent collection. Next up from Dark Horse in slot 9, we've got the Indiana Jones Omnibus Volume 1. At 3,776 units, so we've already dropped well below that 4,000 mark. And $25 price point, their omnibuses are kind of that smaller format, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. I like them. I think they're pretty cool.
Yeah, I think they should have chosen a different name than Omnibus.
Yeah, I guess.
I think Omnibus, because of what's, you know, coming out from Marvel and stuff, and I'm thinking much bigger physical item, and then you look at this and it seems unimpressive in comparison. Whereas if they had kind of branded it differently and kind of done their own marketing term or whatever, it wouldn't have had that kind of baggage.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, 3,776, I expect that we'll see maybe some of this pick up when the next movie comes out. This just seems, again, a little soft. I think there's enough of a fan base for Indiana Jones that it coming in under, you know, 3,800 units for opening numbers, it's just a little surprising. Now,
yeah, I think people have been clamoring for an Indiana Jones collection. And not only this, but Dark Horse is going to be reprinting the old Marvel series as well.
That's cool. Well, and that's something that is probably going to be a slower seller over the longer term kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that's not going to fly off the shelf, but wouldn't surprise me if it moves, not necessarily at any individual store, but overall, you know, a few units a month kind of a thing, just in perpetuity. But, you know, we'll see. And the thing is, those kinds of reorder activity is going to fall well below the radar on this, particularly given where it opened. So, but this will be interesting to look at the year-end numbers and kind of see if there's some major unreported activity for it. Now, in slot 10, I see this as a huge surprise and partially a reflection of how low the numbers started at on this list, but I'm really happy to see the Barks Rosa Collection Volume 2, Donald's Atomic Bomb from Gemstone, finally kind of cracking into the top 10 for the classic Disney material.
Mm-hmm.
It did that with 3,510 units, which, you know, hey, that's about half what the top item for the month did. But it's really cool to see Barks and Rosa actually hit the top 10 for the trades, because I mean that's just classic material.
Well, you may have been in Japan, but did you see that the Gemstone is going to do the 10 volume set, which they released over in Europe? They're gonna re-release the for the American audience the complete Carl Barks Donald Duck in 1,000 pages per volume and have 10 volumes.
No, I didn't hear that. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Starting in December, and they're also going to do the complete Don Rosa, and then they're going to do another Mickey Mouse collection.
Cool.
Forget who that is, but it's all coming out. So,
what's the price point on those going to be?
I think it's going to be $100 per book.
$100 for 1,000 pages, though. That's reasonable, particularly in a nice packaging.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Maybe a little more.
Huh.
It's going to be sweet.
I'll tell
you
what.
Save your money for that one.
When that comes out and gets solicited, actually, when it gets solicited and it's in previews, send a submission to our preview spotlight for that.
Oh, here it is. Complete Karl Barks collection, 960 pages, cover price of $150, and it'll be a 10-volume set.
150 is a little steep, but
yeah.
Interesting.
The Don Rosa Library will be, that might be a trade, actually, and be $40 a book.
That one's an easier sell for me.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's going to be hardcover, the Don Rosa.
Yeah, but the $40, much more palatable to my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm cheap. What can I say?
You're cheap.
All right, let's bounce around a little, take a look at a few other items. If you look at slot 17, they've got the Showcase Presents Enemy Ace Volume 1. It did 3,013 units, which, you know, for a Showcase, not bad. And given that it's Enemy Ace and not, you know, a Batman or an Elongated Man even or a superhero type thing, these, I think, are pretty good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Down at slot 20, was that Diana Prince Wonder Woman Volume 1? Was that a Showcase or not?
Well, no, that is her 70s adventures.
Because I thought in the current previews they had Volume 2 of that, and I thought that was...
No, they did the Showcase, which is her Silver Age from the 1960s, and now these are the Diana Prince years, which... I'm not sure what year they start out at, but they are in like 1972 maybe.
Okay.
And there is going to be a Volume 3 already coming out later in the fall.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, the Diana Prince starts, let's see, with, it doesn't have the year, but it starts, let's see, Wonder Woman 178 through 184 and Lois Lane 93. And then the Showcase... I'll tell you what the Showcase starts at, so we can give you some kind of like a retrospective here. Wonder Woman starts at Wonder Woman 98 and goes to 117. So this, you know, yeah, so Silver Age, this is definitely more of a 1970s, Bronze Age Wonder Woman.
Right.
But it's good that I'm happy they're collecting all the Wonder Woman stuff because, you know, other than... before the Showcase and this Diana Prince, all we had were the archives from the Golden Age. That was it. Now we're getting a flood of Wonder Woman.
No, that's great. I think that's
which is wonderful to see. It's about time, really, being that she's part of their quote-unquote Trinity.
Well, and particularly given the legal issues currently surrounding Superman, where DC's lost half the ownership and could lose the other half
right.
in another couple of years, it makes sense for them to be kind of solidifying a fan base for Wonder Woman in particular, and Batman to a lesser degree. And the reason I say Wonder Woman in particular is the licensing agreement they have with that is they have to do, you know, 4 issues a year or they lose the license kind of thing. Not that there's any risk they won't do 4 issues a year.
Mm-hmm.
But that was part of why we had that Legends of Wonder Woman miniseries prior to the George Perez volume of Wonder Woman starting up. Because if they didn't get those out, they could have lost Wonder Woman at that point.
Now, does she have to be in her own title? Is that the deal? Or can she show up like in the JLA and that covers it?
I think she has to have 4 issues of a book for her.
Okay.
In other words, just showing up in the Justice League I don't think counts.
Okay.
But I think as long as they do that, those 4 issues... they can use her how they want kind of thing.
Which is something they should do anyway. She's a great character.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
But it's one of those...
Sometimes she's almost more exciting than Superman.
Totally,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, from my perspective anyway.
Well, there's so many directions they can go with that character that they just can't with somebody like Superman. I thought the Greg mm-hmm. Rucka run where she had the embassies and stuff was just a lot of fun. But it's one of those that they need to be kind of building up the fan base, solidifying, you know, that for these other characters to where if things kind of stumble a bit with Superman and they've got to do something in that area that they're okay. Now, I say that, and the reality is it's not like Superman is such a strong seller that it's the core of their lineup or anything. Frankly, I think... they could lose the sales from the Superman title entirely and probably not really feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's as much a perception issue as anything else. So.
Yeah, I mean, I may be one of the few people out there that enjoyed Amazon's Attack. But, and the only reason that if there's only one fault to Amazon's Attack is that they tried to connect it to Countdown, and there were too many crossovers that they had to spill out, you know, go into Teen Titans, go into Supergirl, go into all these other titles, which kind of ruined the story for me. And
yeah, but it's a damned if you
missed
do.
A lot. But I thought it was a pretty good storyline.
I agree with that, but it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Because
exactly.
When you have the Amazon's Attack, if nobody else notices, what the hell, you know?
Right.
Yet, if you're not careful, you cross it over into everything. Everything gets watered down. There's too much to follow, etc. It's a very tough balancing act.
But it was almost like a Justice League event and not really a Wonder Woman event. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, and then trying to – I mean, it would have been almost better to do it right after 52 ended, which they kind of did. But, you know, and I know there are problems with the whole Wonder Woman series of books, and it was late and everything, which didn't help matters either. So,
but they seem
that kind of gave her the proverbial black eye.
Yeah, but they seem to have gotten that back on track. They've got Aaron Lopresti taking over the art. He's a fabulous artist. Same kind of school of art, if you will, as Terry Dodson, who I think he even shares a studio with. So it'll be the same kind of basic feel. It'll be, you know, his unique style to it as well. And he's able to get books out on time, you know, so I think he's a perfect match for that title, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him do a long run on that book. So I think the days of Wonder Woman being, you know, kind of perpetually late or whatever, hopefully are completely over.
Good.
But I agree, that kind of didn't help the Amazon's Attack storyline when it started kind of under the gun in that respect. Now, another quasi-event with a questionable reputation got collected into hardcover and came in slot 32, and that's right, it's Onslaught Reborn. Did we really need this? And did it... It did 2,304 units. People say they hate Rob Liefeld and stuff, yet this sold better than than two-thirds of the list. And it wasn't a bad story. It wasn't a great story, but it wasn't a bad story. They did one or two things out of there that I'd like to see somebody like Ed Brubaker kind of pick up on. I don't know
I don't think Brubaker wants to touch this.
Well, no. I think I don't think there's anything about
he would retcon everything anyway.
Well, there's nothing about the Onslaught part that anyone should touch. But there's one character that's now positioned in the mainstream Marvel universe that, if handled by somebody like Brubaker, could be retooled into a really cool character.
Who's that?
It's the Bucky from that universe.
Oh, from that universe. Okay.
Imagine if he took that character and kind of retooled it or whatnot. I mean, look what he did for the Bucky of the mainstream universe, you know? I don't think that's ever going to happen, but I just think it could be fun. Mm-hmm. That was the only thing that justified that series in my opinion. It was okay, but it's like, come on. That, and it took forever to come out.
Mm-hmm, it did.
All right, jumping down to rank 46, we've got more reorder activity for Watchmen. This has been on the list every month for the last at least 14 months straight. And this time we get 1,806 units, bringing the total reported sales on these top 100 lists for it to 65,727 units. And now that's the total known reported sales. And I stress that because even though this has been on the list every month for the last 14, prior to that there were actually a few months where it didn't make the list, so the sales for those months are unknown. But this thing is it's a classic, and it's a slow and steady seller. Again, witnessed by the fact every month for the last 14 it's been on the list. It's only going to go up as the movie comes out. And it makes me wonder, you know, how many people are left that haven't read this? Although, interestingly enough, one of my coworkers recently picked it up and read it, and he hadn't done so before, which, you know, it's like, okay, I guess there are still people like that.
But is he a comic book reader?
Not really. He's one that, when the owner of the company brings in trades and leaves them lying around, he'll flip through. But Watchmen is probably one of the very few things I think he's gone out and bought. Mm-hmm. I don't know that for a fact, but I strongly suspect that. And good call to pick that up. It was a smart move on his part.
Mm-hmm.
So, coming in right below that at rank 47 is the first volume of Why the Last Man, the trade paperback. It, too, is reorder activity at an even 1,800 units. This is the 19th, actually it's been on the list 19 times. This will be the 20th time it's on the list. And its total known sales have exceeded 26,000 units. And again, this is strictly within the comic book retailers serviced by Diamond. So both the numbers for this and the total numbers for Watchmen do not include bookstore sales, book club sales, anything like that. So, but these are strong sales over the long term, even though the individual sales this month are just, you know, average. But even so, these placed, you know, ranks 46 and 47 out of the top 100, so better than half the list. We've got more reorder activity for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Long Way Home. That's the first volume of the Season 8 series. It's in slot 53 with another 1,718 units, bringing its total known sales to 16,527 within the comic book stores. This is just doing great. Dark Horse has a very strong seller here, a definite winner. And it'll be fun to see just how long they can keep this going, hopefully for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one that kind of surprised me is in slot 58 from Marvel at a $13.99 price point, so decent price. And that's the supervillain team-up MODOK's 11 trade paperback. It did 1,547 units. And, yeah, it's kind of in line where a lot of these other things from Marvel and stuff are falling at this point in the list or whatever. But I thought it was a really strong series, miniseries, and I'd kind of expected it to do better than this in the trade, thinking that it got some halfway decent buzz over the run and that more people would have discovered the trade by now.
Did you read this storyline when it came out?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. It was great. It was tons of fun.
Was it a fun title? I mean, was it kind of like a dark comedy villain title?
I wouldn't say a dark comedy.
Position this? Or was it more comedy?
It was serious with a high comedic aspect. In other words, it wasn't slapstick.
Okay. The
basic premise is essentially an Ocean's 11 kind of a thing, except MODOK is in the Danny Ocean role. He picks a number of losers. One of the big characters was Spot. Other ones were Puma or whatever.
I mean, I love the Puma.
These are great characters. I love Spot, don't get me wrong. But these are not A-list villains. These are not B-list villains. You know, these are, oh yeah, I remember him villains.
Yeah.
And it was a fun heist comic. And it's one that, I think if you like any of the villains that star in this or whatever, you should at least check it out. It's one that I really think, had it been marketed a little bit better, a little bit more strongly or innovatively or whatever, the sales on this trade easily could have doubled. I could have seen this, okay, not topping the list, but doing much, much stronger than this.
Mm-hmm.
1,547 units is, I mean, if you assume there's 3,500 comic stores, and for argument's sake, we'll say there is, well over half of them didn't even bother to order a copy.
Yeah.
And any store that ordered more than one means there's yet another store that didn't order one.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't think this is something that's going to fly off the shelf. But it's something that almost has a certain timeless quality to it. You know, 3 years from now, somebody can pick it up and still enjoy it, I think.
Okay.
And it's worth checking out. I thought it was a lot of fun. And it's.
I should pick it up then. I might like that.
I think so. And if not, blame Bob. No, I'm just kidding. It's fun. It's definitely worth checking out. Rank 60, we've got the first volume of the premier hardcover series, The Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe A to Z. It did 1,527 units, which I don't know how many volumes they've committed to for this series.
I think 12.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, gosh, at this level, I don't know. I got to wonder how much they're making on this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm glad they're doing it. I'm loving it. I strongly support this kind of stuff, but it's not really knocking the doors off on the sales. If this had been done in comic format, it probably would be doing in the 18,000 to 25,000 range initially, trailing down a little after that.
What do you mean by comic format?
If instead of going direct to hardcover, if they had done this just as another official handbook of the Marvel
Universe. They did. This is the collection of the ones they did.
They're updating some of the material, I believe.
Are they updating it? Okay.
Updating
I remember,
and adding, I thought.
Okay, because I think this is the new one. This new round of handbooks started in 2004, and it goes all the way up to 2000, well, like Planet Hulk.
Right, right.
They're collecting them all in alphabetical order, because I have all the 2004s and I have all the 2005s.
I'm skimming through the solicitation blurb for it, and...
They could be updating it. I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really say either way. It could go either way. And honestly, I haven't opened my copy, so I don't know.
Okay.
But even as a reprint thing, well, unless if it's strictly reprint with some minor updates here and there, these are okay numbers. Certainly if it's new material, and I certainly don't think it's all new material. It never is.
Right. Because what I was going to do is have – when I saw this coming out, I mean, I was – okay, I wasn't really going to pick it up because, like I said, I have the 2004s and I have the 2005s, and I was going to bind together my 2004s in one volume and then subsequent years after that. So I'm going to have all these anyway, just in a different order, as it were.
I'd go with the hardcovers just to have them in alphabetical order, but that's me wanting to be able to find stuff.
Right, right, right. And they probably will add new material in or add in the Marvel Atlas that they just put out.
Yeah, yeah. But this is one of those things that subsequent volumes are going to trail off in sales a little. So depending how future months go, it's possible that not all of these volumes would make the list.
Oh, I could see that, yeah.
So that I find a little surprising.
You may be able to pick these up really cheap at a convention too. You know,
that would not surprise me at all. Yeah, I think you're right on that. Now, the next one below that, rank 61, is the Time Master Series trade paperback, also at the 1,527 units. And that's of interest potentially to Rip Hunter fans from 52 and stuff. That was the series that was done back in, gosh, I'm thinking the 1990s, give or take. By Bob Wayne and Lewis Shiner, and Rip Hunter's bouncing around has to find different ways to travel through time, because at that point the rule was you could only use one method once.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want more Rip Hunter, that's a good place to go.
Yeah, I should pick that. I missed that the first time around. I gotta pick that up.
It's good. It's not great. Mm-hmm. So now at rank 67 in the category of cut your losses and move on, I think, is Jumper Jump Scars from Oni Press at $14.95. This is something I actually did pick up in trade format, although, as you know, I usually get things in the monthly comic format. The reason I got this in trade format is they canceled the four-issue miniseries. This went straight to trade.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way it was solicited as the mini, and then that quietly got canceled, and then the trade just came out, I think it attributes for part of the what I consider very low sales of 1,336 for this, because this tied into the movie. And usually if you've got a movie connection or whatnot, you're going to do a little bit better than 1,336 units, I hope.
Right.
So this is something that I'm sure the numbers came back on the miniseries just too low to justify, and they said, hey, let's just go straight to the trade.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they should have handled that better. This is one where if they'd had more of a time lag between the mini and the trade, they would have had time to let people realize, hey, we've canceled the miniseries. If you want the story, get the trade.
Mm-hmm.
And this would have had better sales.
Now, how would they redo that? If you order the first, you know, issue number one through a DCBS order, you know, and then it gets canceled, do you have to reorder the trade then? Because that may have
hindered
a lot of people.
You're not reordering the trade. You are ordering the trade.
You're ordering the trade. But they cancel issue one, which you have already pre-ordered.
One, two, three, and four.
Yeah.
So I realized, hey, that the whole thing's gone.
Yeah.
And I realized that just because I perused the cancellation list Diamond puts out every month. And it's like, what the hell? So I realized that. I realized the trade was still there, and I sent DCBS an email saying, hey, they've canceled the series. Get me the trade. And they were able to do that. But I had to be kind of proactive on that, and if I hadn't noticed that the miniseries had been canceled yet,
that's my point. Yeah, right.
I think a lot of people fell into that category. I think a lot of stores may have fallen into that category.
Yeah. So, or maybe like, but you, like you said, you're proactive. You know, average Joe comic fan may have not have been proactive and just not even realized it. And you know, hey, where's my jumper that I thought I ordered? Oh, that had been canceled. You want to get the trade? No, forget about it, kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, if they're smart, when the movie comes out in DVD, they'll do a promotional push and reoffer the trade.
That would be smart, yes.
So hopefully they'll do that because, yeah, they deserve better sales than this.
Mm-hmm.
And again, figuring this is an original trade, essentially,
mm-hmm.
1,336 units, they're not making their money on this, I don't think.
Well, that's the other thing. Anybody who buys this movie is going to be a pretty hardcore fan. And they can, you know, they may have already owned this or would like to own it. I mean...
Well, that's the other thing, is they need to get an arrangement with that studio that's doing the DVD.
Throw in
an ad in that DVD box. I mean, that's something that's probably worth doing, because they did I thought they had some kind of a preview thing or whatever for this. It mm-hmm. would be worth doing an 8-page little preview insert thing into the DVD collection, or a DVD set.
Oh, they did, yeah. I think at Comic Book Resources they did. Yeah. They had a 8-page preview or something, yeah.
So print that out in a little thing, toss that inside the DVD box, and maybe that'll be enough to get people interested.
You know what? That's a good question. When they do those 8-page promotional, do they put those up on the official movie website?
I don't know, and that would be a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
Because it would depend what studio's doing the movie, who they've got doing the website, how tied in they are or aren't with the comic. But, I mean, really, I think... companies that are licensing their material out for movies, which is not the case here.
Mm-hmm.
This is them doing an adaptation or prequel type thing for a movie, which was based on a novel.
Mm-hmm.
But in other cases where it starts as a comic, they really need to build into the licensing contract that certain obligations for the studio.
Mm-hmm.
You will mention this was from a comic. In the DVD set, you will include this, that, and the other. We'll help provide the material, whatever kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And really start leveraging the audience of the DVDs of the movies and trying to get that awareness that, hey, this property, this movie you just loved was based on a comic.
Well, because what it comes down to is reciprocating, because when this Jumper comic book comes out, it'll say, you know, the motion picture coming soon starring Christensen and Jackson. You know, and so the comic book will be promoting the movie, but does the movie promote the comic book?
Well,
do they reciprocate?
In that case, is the comic book really promoting the movie or trying to leverage the movie to get sales?
They're leveraging the movie to get sales.
You know, and I agree, it's still kind of sort of promoting the movie, but, you know, kind of backhandedly.
Right.
But the reciprocation should be done regardless. Certainly
exactly.
When Wanted comes out as a movie, there ought to be a big thing of, hey, this started as an Image comic.
Oh, well, Angelina Jolie is doing some sort of introduction for the new hardcover coming out.
Well, that's great for the hardcover.
Yeah.
But you want the people who watch the movie to realize there is a hardcover.
Right. Exactly. Right.
And there have been so many hit movies based on comics and stuff that people just don't realize that. And if we can start, you know, getting people to open their eyes and realize that there's a wealth of really good material hidden in the comics and trades these days, everyone stands to gain.
What would the cost be for a company, you know, for whoever, you know, for the Wanted movie coming out, let's say, to do a 30-second ad before the movie? And it could be in selected theaters, too. It doesn't have to be, you know, nationwide.
Well,
but, you know, I mean, they've got all the Coca-Cola and automobile ads anyway. Why not run a 30-second spot for a comic book? And then maybe you can get some of those people to go buy the comic book.
I think that's almost the wrong way to go about it, because at that point you're talking advertising that they have to buy. If they're providing the movie as part of the film they deliver to the theaters, should include that. You know what I mean? It should be, I mean, I don't know how, what previews get shown in front of what movies, how all of that's determined or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it should just be part and parcel of that, almost. Or actually, more again, part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marvel's got a halfway decent start with the whole little Marvel logo type thing, but... as far as some people are concerned, that may as well be another 20th Century Fox studio logo.
Oh, and DC's doing something similar to that too, yeah.
Yeah, there's got to be something of, hey, you know, go check out your local comic book store. That's where our stuff is.
Yeah.
And it's got to be done by the studio doing the movie, and it should be contractually obligated for them to do that, to where DC, Marvel, Image, these other companies aren't having to pay advertising to get the word out. You know, it's a matter of rethinking the problem. Because for the people doing the DVD for Jumper, to toss in an insert or whatever into the DVD case, that's promotional money, that's cost of doing business, whatever. For Oni Press to pay for them to do that, exorbitant.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Oni would not be able to afford that, and certainly it would kill any profit they may have just made on this trade.
Right.
So, but again, this is a case where Oni is doing a licensed property versus Wanted being starting as a comic and being turned into a movie. So different rules apply there. So that's pretty much all I got. You got anything else?
No, I think that's good place to wrap it up there, John.
Cool. Sounds good. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.